Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Not my king!
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 At least 52 protesters were arrested in London during the coronation of King Charles III. We'll look at the protests and calls from groups in former British colonies for the king to pay reparations and apologize for Britain's legacy of genocide and colonization. Then the U.S. Supreme Court temporarily stays the execution of Richard Glossop in Oklahoma. We'll speak to his spiritual advisor, Sister Helen Prejean.
You saw such a quick decision by the Supreme Court to stay in execution and grant this man cert. I'd never seen anything like it.
Plus, we look at growing calls for new ethics rules for Supreme Court justices as more information emerges about Clarence Thomas's secret financial dealings with Republican billionaire GOP activist Harlan Crow. But we'll begin the show in Brownsville, Texas, where eight people have died after an SUV plowed into a group of people near a migrant shelter. Most of the dead are reportedly men from Venezuela. At least one witness reported the driver gestured at and insulted migrants as his car plowed into them. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Texas, a man armed with a semi-automatic rifle killed eight people and injured seven others Saturday at a suburban shopping mall outside Dallas before he was shot dead by a police officer. Hospitals treated victims as young as five, as old as 61. Among the dead were Christian LaCour, a 20-year-old security guard at the mall, and Aishwarya Tatikanda, a 27-year-old engineer from India whose fiancé was injured and had two bullets removed from his body. One young boy was found alive beneath the body of his mother, who died protecting him. Over 100 spent shell casings were recovered from the scene. Authorities haven't yet cited a motive, but are investigating whether the 33-year-old gunman had ties to white supremacist groups. He wore tactical gear and a patch on his chest reading RWDS, for Right Wing Death Squad, a slogan popular among neo-Nazis. As Texas Governor Greg Abbott spoke Sunday at a prayer vigil in Allen, protesters outside demanded reforms to gun laws. Meanwhile, in Brownsville, Texas, eight people were killed, at least 10 others injured Sunday after an SUV plowed into a group of pedestrians near a shelter for migrants and unhoused people not far from the U.S.-Mexico border. The driver was treated for injuries and arrested for reckless driving, though is likely to face additional charges. Investigators say the driver's refusing to identify himself is not cooperating with their probe into whether the killings were intentional. At least one witness reported the driver gestured at and insulted migrants as his car plowed into them. An unidentified witness reflected on the journey taken by migrants who were injured in the crash.
We hope they will recover because they have families far away who count on them. We crossed mountains, marched, and passed migration. It was a long way to come here, and we fought hard.
The ACLU of Texas noted the crash followed weeks of escalating anti-immigrant policymaking by Texas lawmakers. And while the Biden administration considers imposing a new ban on the right to seek asylum in the U.S. when the Trump-era Title 42 policy ends May 11th, in a statement, the ACLU added, quote, President Biden, Texas Governor Abbott, and other elected officials continue to spread fear about immigration instead of treating the needs of people crossing the border as a humanitarian matter, unquote. We'll speak with Attorney Jennifer Harbury. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers shot and killed two more Palestinian men Saturday, both 22 years old, during a raid on a refugee camp near the city of Tulkarm. Elsewhere in the West Bank, Israeli forces demolished a Palestinian elementary school in the village of Jabed al-Dib near Bethlehem Sunday. The European Union, which funded the school, condemned its destruction and called on Israel to halt all demolitions and evictions. This is student Mohammed Ibrahim.
We got ready to come to school, and when we arrived, we didn't find this school. We want a school today. We want to study. If the Israeli forces will keep demolishing, we will keep building. We want to study at our school. It was a nice school. We want another one.
Here in the United States, Minnesota Democratic Congressmember Betty McCollum reintroduced a bill Friday that would bar U.S. aid to Israel from being used to detain Palestinian children, as well as military activities that lead to, quote, further unilateral annexation, unquote, of the occupied West Bank. The bill's backed by 17 Democrats. Meanwhile, the World Food Program says it'll suspend food aid to over 200,000 Palestinians starting next month because of funding shortages. Russian drone strikes rained down on Kyiv and other parts of Ukraine overnight. Kyiv's mayor says over 30 drones targeting the capital were shot down. Over the weekend, Ukraine also said it downed a Russian hypersonic missile for the first time using the U.S. Patriot missile defense system. Russia's evacuated over 1,600 people around the beleaguered Zaporizhia nuclear power plant ahead of an expected Ukrainian counteroffensive. And as the U.N. nuclear watchdog warned, the situation at the plant is potentially dangerous. Meanwhile, the leader of Russian mercenary force Wagner Group has backtracked on his threat to withdraw from the war-torn city of Bakhmut after he said the Russian military agreed to send more ammunition. Ukraine has accused Russia of using white phosphorus bombs in Bakhmut, which would constitute a war crime. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, over 400 people were killed and entire villages were wiped away after torrential rains Thursday led rivers to burst their banks in South Kivu province. A head of a local civil society organization said his group is appealing for whatever help they can get, as many people have lost everything.
People are sleeping out in the open. There are schools that have been washed away. We do not know how our students will study. There are hospitals that have been taken away.
The tragedy comes just days after floods killed at least 136 people in neighboring Rwanda. While visiting the region, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres offered his condolences and said, quote, this is yet another illustration of accelerating climate change and its disastrous impact on countries that have done nothing to contribute to global warming, unquote. During his talk in Burundi, Guterres also called for a halt to violence in the DRC.
I renew my call for de-escalation, appeasement, and restraint of armed groups. Whether local or foreign, they must lay down their arms in the DRC.
In the northeastern Indian state of Manipur, near Burma and Bangladesh, as many as 55 people have been killed, hundreds more injured, tens of thousands have fled since fighting broke out between two ethnic groups last Wednesday. The clashes were triggered by a dispute over the state's largest ethnic group, which is seeking a special tribal designation that would grant members certain benefits, including access to colleges, government jobs, and elected positions. Members of the Arab League moved to readmit Syria after 12 years of suspension during a meeting in Cairo Sunday. It's the latest push to reestablish ties between Arab nations and Damascus after Syria's Arab League membership was revoked in 2011 following President Bashar al-Assad's violent crackdown on protesters that drove Syria into a devastating civil war, killing an estimated 500,000 people and displacing millions more. This is Ahmed Abulgeit, Secretary General of the Arab League.
The return of Syria is the beginning of a movement, not an end. The direction of the resolution to the crisis in Syria will take time for procedures to be implemented, and it will be gradual. The task of this committee is to follow up on those procedures. Also, it is not a decision to resume relationships between Arab states and Syria. This is a sovereign decision left for every country to take on its own.
In Chile, right-wing parties have won a majority of seats on a 50-member commission tasked with rewriting the nation's Pinochet-era constitution. Sunday's vote was another defeat for President Gabriel Boric after voters last September rejected a proposed progressive constitution that would have expanded rights for indigenous peoples and abortion seekers, guaranteed universal health care, and addressed the climate crisis. In Britain, thousands of guests packed into Westminster Abbey Saturday to witness the coronation of King Charles. Outside the ceremony, police cracked down on protesters, arresting at least 52 people. Activists from the anti-monarchy group Republic say their leader and other members were detained even before they started protesting. Environmentalists with Just Stop Oil and other groups were also arrested. Demonstrators condemned laws suppressing public protest, the monarchy's colonial history, and its anti-democratic nature.
Our intention is to show that there is a Republican movement in the UK, and it is growing every single day. The trends show more and more people dislike the monarchy and want an elected head of state or no head of state or a democratic alternative to what we have now.
Back in the United States, the Supreme Court Friday granted an indefinite stay of execution for Oklahoma prisoner Richard Glossop, who'd been scheduled to be put to death May 18th. This comes after Oklahoma's Republican Attorney General and Glossop's defense team filed a joint motion to halt the execution. Glossop has maintained his innocence in the 1997 murder-for-hire for the past quarter century. Later in the show, we'll talk to his spiritual advisor, Sister Helen Prejean. In Washington, D.C., Peter Schwartz, a Pennsylvania man who pepper-sprayed officers and threw a chair at them during the January 6th Capitol insurrection, was sentenced Friday to more than 14 years in prison. It's the longest sentence yet for a Capitol rioter. And in Deer Park, Texas, 9 workers were hospitalized after a Shell petrochemical plant exploded Friday, spawning a massive fire that burned throughout the weekend. According to the Climate Justice Alliance, about 40% of U.S. residents live within a 3-mile radius of high-risk chemical facilities, where they face the threat of leaks, spills and explosions. A disproportionate share of those at high risk are from communities of color. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in the South Texas city of Brownsville, along the U.S. border with Mexico, where 8 people were killed and at least 10 more injured Sunday after an SUV drove into a group of people outside a migrant shelter. People say the driver is Hispanic and is in custody, but is not cooperating with their investigation into his motive. Most of the men killed were Venezuelan and had arrived in the U.S. days earlier, their identities still being determined by Customs and Border Patrol. One survivor said the driver was shouting obscenities and yelled that immigrants were invading the United States as he plowed into the group of men. This is a witness.
We hope they will recover because they have families far away who count on them. We crossed mountains, marched, and passed migration. It was a long way to come here, and we fought hard.
This comes as a number of people coming to the border to seek asylum is expected to continue to rise as the Trump-era Title 42 policy ends Thursday. A coalition of more than 240 rights groups is calling for the Biden administration not to use immigrant jails to address the expected increase. Just last month, 2 dozen tents were set on fire in a makeshift migrant camp in Matamoros, Mexico, across the border from Brownsville. And in March, a fire killed 40 men at a Mexican immigration jail in Ciudad Juarez, across the border from El Paso, Texas. For more, we go to Weslaco, not far from Brownsville, Texas. We're joined by Jennifer Harbury, longtime human rights lawyer along the U.S.-Mexico border, activist with the Angry Tias and Abuelas, who support asylum seekers in the area. Jennifer's late husband, Efraín Bámaca Velázquez, was a Mayan guerrillan comandante in Guatemala who was disappeared after he was captured by the Guatemalan army in the 80s. After a long campaign, she found there was U.S. CIA involvement in the cover-up of her husband's murder and torture. She's also the author of Truth, Torture, and the American Way, the history and consequences of U.S. involvement in torture. Jennifer Harbury, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you tell us about the Bishop Enrique San Pedro Ozanam Center and the people killed outside?
Well, Amy, good morning to you, first of all, and I'm glad to be back. All of us here that have been working so closely with the migrant community since 2017, many of us, are heartbroken today. This certainly is I can only describe it as a hate crime. It was motivated by hate that has been, of course, fomented for a long time by the right wing, and especially during the Trump administration. These people had made it from Venezuela and other countries all the way across Mexico, which is a horrific journey, and managed to make it to the border. I work on the Reynosa side, Matamoros side, and have since 2017. And I would say close to 100% of the people I have interviewed have suffered either a rape, a vicious attack, a kidnapping, or worse on the way north. For these people to have fled Venezuela, made it all the way north, waited their turn, crossed legally across the bridge with the new app on their phone, spent the night at a shelter and then were at a bus stop to go to the airport so they could reunite with their families at last and wait for the courts to decide on their immigration status, for them to be plowed down by a vicious American spurred on by hate. It's killing all of us, to be honest. All of us that have seen what they've been through. We've held their children. We've held their hands when their children have died, when they've tried to tell their stories. These are such horrific backgrounds that most of us are pretty traumatized too. And to have them needlessly and irrationally mowed down, literally, with an SUV, I'm at loss of words.
I wanted to ask you about the comment of the ACLU of Texas, noting the crash followed weeks of escalating anti-immigrant policy that has been made by Texas lawmakers. And while the Biden administration considers imposing a new ban on the right to seek asylum in the United States when the Trump-era Title 42 ends on Thursday. In a statement, the ACLU wrote, President Biden, Texas Governor Abbott, and other elected officials continue to spread fear about immigration instead of treating the needs of people crossing the border as a humanitarian matter. Can you talk about the context this is all happening in?
Yes, certainly there's been a ridiculous amount of fear-mongering and villainization, politically inspired, against migrants from the beginnings of the new migrant waves, certainly starting in 2017, but even before. Remember, they're all rapists and murderers. In fact, a majority of them are families. The forced recruitment age by gangs in most of Central America. If your little boy is between 8 and 10, they're going to come for him. One mother said no, and they chopped the child's fingers off with an axe to convince her. What we have to understand, these people are not coming here to buy a fancy refrigerator. This is an incredible migration north out of desperation to save the lives of their children, whether from political violence or from cartel violence, which is now out of control. I note that for Reynosa and Matamoros and most of Tamaulipas, the United States Department of State has declared it a Category 4 insecurity. That makes it the same as Iraq and Afghanistan. When we tell people to wait in Mexico or go back where you came from, we're saying, why don't you just sit down and watch your children drop dead? We need to think about that. We need to think about it not just legally, but we need to think about that in terms of our national identity. This is us, a nation of immigrants, but for the Native Americans. We're telling these people they should sit and watch their children die. Why?
You know, Jennifer, you were responsible for the release of that famous audio of babies crying in 2018.
Yeah, I'm laughing only because it felt good to release that. But I think people need to see and hear the reality. I watched a short video clip last night of the scene when people were still lying on the ground, literally bleeding to death last night in front of Ozanam. And it, needless to say, it made me ill. I haven't recovered yet, but it was not the blood and the incredible scene of cadavers lying helter-skelter where they've been thrown through the air by the van. The worst was the soundtrack accompanied by a shadow of a man holding his hands to his head and screaming for his brother. No, no, mano. No, hermano. No, manito. No, no, my brother. No, no. But the tone of utter despair. They were just about to reach safety with their families, and now the young man is dead. I think most people like to read statistics. They like dry press articles. I invite any of them to come down here. People are pretty much scared to come down here now that there was the shooting in Matamoros, but that's an hourly reality for all of the migrants. Someday history is going to show who the migrants really were and the fact that we knew perfectly well who they really were. And then everyone's going to ask us, our children and our grandchildren, why did you turn a cold shoulder to them? This is a time for a moral and historical decision by all countries. There is an enormous migration for many, many reasons, including climate, but also including wild political and cartel violence. If all of us really want to help with the migration issue, the first thing we should do is take the profits out of the drug trade. A Colombian priest at an event 20 years ago in San Francisco said, "I know how unpopular a suggestion this is, but the only way to stop the violence that is killing us in Colombia now and having it pass all the way to your doorstep and into your cities, the only way is to legalize drugs, take the profit out and put the money into rehab centers and schools and job training. You have to do it now before it's too late." Well, we clearly lost the drug war. It's time to legalize, as much as that's horrifying to so many of us. But as with any other kind of narcotic or prohibited substance, people will get it. Now it's with fentanyl and with men with AR-15s on the playground, literally. Maybe it's time for us to wake up and get that shut down. While we're at it, think a little bit about what we're talking about when we talk about recreational or party drugs.
And Jennifer Harbury, the reason I introduced you the way I did, going back in your history, what, 40 years, it's hard to believe, 30 yeah. years, about the yeah. killing of your husband, Everardo, and it turned out, because of your numerous hunger strikes, almost dying in Guatemala, that it was revealed in U.S. documents that he was killed by CIA-backed informants who murdered him, the Guatemalan military. Can you trace the trajectory of U.S. support for right-wing regimes and death squads in Central America to what we're seeing today and end with May 11th, Thursday? President Biden is sending over 1,500 troops to the border. Your thoughts?
Well, clearly we don't need more guns. The only people are getting used on is, you know, 5 feet tall women with babies and young men who are trying to refuse to work with, you know, for the drug cartels. The trajectory is this: the United States government backed, during the dirty wars of the 80s, they backed the governments that were mostly oligarchy, large plantation owners and right wingers, because our investments and financial interests squared with theirs. As a result, we sent in the CIA and de facto many more parts of our security forces into, for example, Guatemala. And we worked hand in glove with the death squads. That would be the military death squads that were working for the Guatemalan government and that carried out a campaign of genocide throughout Guatemala all of the 80s and all of the 90s and used torture and terror as a daily technique. That is documented in Memoria de Silencio, the United Nations Truth Commission report that held Guatemala responsible as a government for 94% of the war crimes which had occurred. The URNG forces were found responsible for 3%. After the war ended, most of those high-level military officials who were so well-trained in torture, terror, and corruption still needed a good income, and they were out of a job, and the CIA wasn't hiring as much anymore. The CIA, by the way, had paid $40,000 to one of my husband's torturers the same month that he was seen being tortured by that colonel, Colonel Julio Roberto Alperez. Yes, we knew people were being tortured. We knew where the torture centers were, and we paid money to get more information. We conspired, aided, and abetted in torture and murder and disappearances. So after the war, where would they go? Well, they'd been, for a small fee, assisting Colombian drug lords for a very long time, including Mr. Alperez. So they were well-trained in that, too. They formed their own cartels, one of the best-known being the Zeta cartel, which is operating out up here in northern Mexico along the border as well. And they trained them in torture techniques and the use of terror. And that, of course, is extremely functional. So all of those people now so terrorize the general population that they are running northwards as refugees to our border, and all of us are villainizing them as some kind of monsters for trying to do exactly what our own grandparents did. In my case, my father running from the Holocaust with his parents. So they're running from a monster that we created. We could help lessen that current problem if instead of giving huge amounts of money to a corrupt government and watching it all flow back to the same drug lords, the same military units, et cetera, et cetera. If we would, for example, allow the DEA to arrest and take people that were once CIA partners. Alpirez is also known to have aided and abetted the murder of a U.S. citizen named Michael Devine. After the uproar in my husband's case, everyone was pointing at him and talking about what to do. The DEA has him on a corrupt officer list. But instead of being arrested, the CIA brought him to the United States secretly with his entire family and kept him in a safe place not far from their headquarters. When I tried to come forward and file Torture Victim Protection Act case against him up there, needless to say, he was tipped off by our own government and fled back down to Guatemala, where he is now trying to put me in jail if I move forward with the case.
Jennifer, so, we just have 20 seconds.
All right.
So going through to Thursday, the day that Title 42 lapses.
We will not see a different storm or flood of people. There may be a flood, but that is because many people have left their home countries and they're hiding out wherever they can. If they know there's a chance, if they come to Matamoros or Brownsville or Juarez, that they'll be in horrible danger, but they can at least get on the phone and arrange for a date, they're going to try. Going back or staying where they are or staying in Reynosa for any length of time or Matamoros is a death sentence, but they're going to try. This is a huge wave of desperate civilians trying to escape an impossible situation. The real question here is not how do we stop them. The real question is, how do we all as an international community work together and take them in and stop the bonfire that's destroying them all?
Jennifer Harbury, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Longtime human rights activist and lawyer based in the Rio Grande Valley, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border. Thank you so much for being with us. I know you're going off to a vigil in honor of the people killed and injured. Next up, we look at the coronation of King Charles III and calls for him to pay reparations and apologize for Britain's legacy of genocide and colonization. Back in 30 seconds.
It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. And when he does his little rounds round the boutiques of London town, eagerly pursuing all the latest fads and trends, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion.
Dedicated follower of fashion by the Kinks. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Britain, where King Charles and Queen Camilla were officially crowned Saturday in a ceremony at Westminster Abbey, the first coronation in Britain in 70 years. Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby administered the coronation oath.
The coronation oath has stood for centuries and is enshrined in law. Are you willing to take the oath?
I am willing.
Will you solemnly promise and swear to govern the peoples of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, your other realms and the territories to any of them belonging or pertaining, according to their respective laws and customs?
I solemnly promise so to do. The things which I have herebefore promised, I will perform and keep, so help me God.
Inside Westminster Abbey, police arrested at least 52 people, including numerous anti-monarchy activists who say they were detained before they even started protesting. This is Graham Smith of the anti-monarchist group Republic.
No, we're very much a protester, and we've been speaking to the police for 4 months. We've been very clear and candid about what our plans are, and we've also had 5 other protests around the country within short distance of the king each time, and each protest has gone off without any problems at all.